Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Don't be ridiculous.
Welcome, friends, to Perfect Stranger Things. An occasional dance of joy for your eardrums. I'm your host, Anthony. So, we missed the window for a season wrap, so we're going to get a jump on a season 5 preview. Steve and I talk a bit about the things we'd like to see the Duffer Brothers bring into season 5. And then if you stick around afterwards, you'll hear a sample podcast from Double Dragon. That's going to be a Steve and Anthony joint. We will cover House of the Dragon weekly. So that's at the end of this pod. Okay, before we get to Steve, here's a few words from that Quaker Oats cutie. That's right, it's Mr. Wilford Brimley.
You got a story in here. This is the damnest story you ever read. Tell you what we're going to do. We're going to sit right here and talk about it. Now, we'll talk all day if you want it. It's the right thing to do.
I thought we could either do like a season wrap, or we could do a way too early preview of season 5.
Yeah, but like no information. I think that's perfect.
With zero information. So, yeah, I think that...
What what to expect if we were in charge.
If there's one thing that I've learned from cable news, it's if you're the first person to the story, it doesn't really matter if you get
the facts
right. If
it's really even a story.
Yeah. Right. So we are going to be the first of this party. We're going to do the first season 5 preview of Stranger Things. And it'll be pretty simple. I've come up with 3 things that I would like to see them develop in season 5. And I've asked you to come up with 3 things.
Mm-hmm.
And I think one of us needs to go first.
So this should be a 3-sided die.
Why 3?
Well, because then there's a Gucci, and then no one will know.
Of course, Gucci. Okay, I've got a 10-sided die. We've got 8 moons. why don't you go first? What's one thing that you would like to see them do with season 5?
I would like to see Will be... Okay, I need Will to be sort of full circle on this. I need him to be a prominent figure. I feel like he...
You want him to be a character in Cruising with Al Pacino.
Yes. I mean, Will is, you know, a central figure in season 1, but not like in terms of... Like, he's just more of a, hey, gotta go get Will. We gotta go find Will, right? I mean, and that sort of seems to be his role. And I feel like it's time, right? I feel like the last scene, you know, I mean, Will's, he's obviously still connected to the Upside Down in a very prominent way. And I feel like he needs to serve a bigger purpose and, you know, And maybe put on a hat or get a haircut. I mean, that's like, those are like, in order for me to embrace this character and go on a journey with him, I'm just going to need throw on maybe even a do-rag. I would settle for a do-rag.
I think Will is due to have a major storyline. I mean, look, it's not like he wasn't an integral element. You can't have season 1 without the vanishing of Will Byers, right?
Yeah, but you could have never shown Will.
But right? he's more of a MacGuffin, right? So
Yeah.
If they let me put it this way. If they don't make him a major element of season five, I will be disappointed. Mm-hmm. Because I feel like this last season was just all kind of the build up to his coming out, and then that was a little bit understated. So,
right, yeah. So because that's what you set this up for in many ways, right? Mm-hmm. You set up not only for him to be a major part of maybe understanding the Upside Down, but also the relationship dynamic between him and, you know, probably Mike specifically, but all the other kids in this, right? I mean, that's one thing that the show does so well is it balancing the relationship aspect, the human interaction aspect, alongside the thrills and the horror and all that stuff. So I think that you've introduced this in a way where I trust that they can handle it well, and now I'm compelled. So you got to, that's two delivery points, right? Like I need to deliver on the personal side of Will and on the, you know, the fantasy side.
Right. And this show has sort of become famous for capturing some kind of 1980s authenticity, right? So I think what you got to do is if they are going to make him a major character in the show, they have to create conflict around his coming out. I don't feel like these teenage kids in Hawkins, Indiana are going to simply embrace Will for who he is. I think that there's got to be. And the other thing about this is that creating a story is about creating drama, and that means that you create conflict. And this is kind of ripe for some kind of commentary on what it would be to come out in Indiana in the 1980s.
So that's your first one, right?
Or is that that's your first one?
Yeah. So you're piggybacking on mine. Okay.
Here's my first one. I would like to see a hip hop theme in season five.
Oh my!
I feel like for me, my discovery of rap music just changed everything for me. Like that was all I listened to. And I think that they kind of hinted at it with the Kid and Play hairdo.
Yeah, so you're thinking that there's going to be a point where they're going to be like, uh-oh, the Upside Down is now creeping into our world. You know what we have to do? And they all look at each other and say, a pajama jammy jam.
House party. House party. The mother of house parties, man. A pajama jammy jam.
It's been a long time since I've heard anyone say pajama jammy jam. No, I would love to see. They've done a great job bringing in, you know, alternative stuff. You know, they brought in punk. They brought in metal this last season. I think it's time to bring in hip hop. And
that's a good call for sure.
It's just such a big part of my experience of the 80s. And it could be that that wasn't a big deal in Hawkins, Indiana, but it's not like The Clash was really a big deal in Hawkins, Indiana, 1983 either. So, all right, what's your next one?
Touched a little bit on it in my first one, but I need to them to continue the personal real life side of Stranger Things. And I think it's going to be a little bit more of a challenge this time because every season ends with the gate closing.
Yeah.
And then so then you sort of pick up like, okay, now we're dealing with Lucas trying to be popular and how that impacts, you know, their relationships. And so you get all of those, like every season begins with life trying to get back to normal. This one ends with, I mean, I just don't know if you're going to get any of that. Right. I mean, it's,
yeah,
this one ended with the gate opening, and it's their world is now going to be. I mean, the Upside Down is creeping in, right? So, I expect we're going to see a lot of monsters, and there's going to be it's bleeding into their world potentially. So it's like this one's going to have.
Yeah, I guess it depends
potential
on how much people are just going to go about their daily lives, because it's like if Ted is your barometer. Like, his life hasn't changed a whole lot, right? He's just going to sit there and watch TV. It doesn't really matter what's creeping in through the Upside Down gate, right?
Right. Well, I guess the thing for me is that the reason why life can continue to go on is because the people, like the kids in particular, they always seem to be aware of the Upside Down, whereas none of the other people in Hawkins mm-hmm. were, right? Mm-hmm. And they still think this is a result of an earthquake, but all it's going to take is one monster to be visible in their world, and then all bets are off, right? Like, I mean, now they live in Monster Town. And so, don't get me wrong, I'm very interested to see how that happens, but I get a little bit concerned that this is going to become like hyper focused on on battles and
always liked the balance. We like the balance between right. sort of the everyday kid life stuff, and this show's been usually good. If you think about like where are the locations, prominent locations in this show to kind of give us a sense of everyday kid life, right? The Family Video. They've used the mall. They've used in previous seasons. They've used the arcade. Is normal kid stuff going on in places like the mall or places like the arcade or going to the movies or something like that? Can you still go to the movies and just sit down and enjoy a movie in Hawkins, Indiana, or is it just apocalypse?
Right. And so I think that's part maybe where I'm the most intrigued to see what happens. I mean, I'm going to trust them to take us on this journey, but there is a sense of like we might lose.
Okay, this is why I don't mind the timey-wimey stuff, because let's say it is apocalyptic hellscape in Hawkins. They could go back to 1983 and sort of experience 1983 culture, like Hawkins, Indiana, just like going about its daily business again. Sort of a part of their mission to, change something. I don't know. I mean, that there's all kinds of possibility for that.
That's true. I mean, that does open up that opportunity to revisit it. Or even if it's just like some do, right? Like maybe not all, but some do. And so there's still an opportunity to cultivate some of that. I mean, we have, relationships that still need to be mended, right? I mean, we have the Will Mike dynamic that just sort of kind of came onto the scene, mm-hmm. and then you've got the Jonathan and Steve and Nancy triangle, which is going to have to be reconciled. So all that can still exist, but if it's again in the post-apocalyptic hellscape, then that does seem like that's going to take a priority. So we'll see. I mean, we've got Max in a situation, obviously, and so, there's that to resolve. But
you think we might find Ted and Karen in marriage counseling?
That's the other thing. I mean, we'll get to my third in a bit. Okay. But,
All right, here's my second.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care, and we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it, all while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
So every season they brought in an actor, a prominent actor from the 80s, right? So they brought in season one, they brought in Modine, someone that you probably hadn't thought about since the late 90s or something. Then they brought in Sean Astin, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then you brought in Reiser, right? But then you also brought in this last season, you brought in... who's the dude that played Freddy?
Robert Englund.
Yes, right. Yeah. So then you brought in Robert Englund. So if they are true to form, they will bring in an 80s actor to play a role, even if it's a minor role in the show. And I was thinking Linda Hamilton.
Oh, because this would go right along with that.
Yeah, I think it would go with the Terminator 2 stuff. And, you know, she might be a character that you could revive for this show.
That in mind, I would like to see Corey Feldman.
Corey Feldman, of course. You'd love to see Corey Feldman. Yeah.
Guys, I just came out from the Upside Down. It's crazy down there.
All right.
Gonna go see him again next month. Very excited.
Are you really?
Uh-huh.
Now, what's his band called again?
Well, he was Corey and like Corey's Angels.
Uh-huh, sure.
Yeah. So I don't know if he's got the Angels with him this time. We'll find out. I like the idea that maybe he'd just be with like this little like jazz trio.
Where is he going to be performing?
Someplace in Sacramento. Not very large venue.
Okay, if you go see this, leave a review for Corey Feldman and Corey's Angels on the Double Dragon iTunes review feed.
Right.
All
right,
so that's mine. I'd like to see them bring in an actor, and my suggestion would be Linda Hamilton. All right, what's your third?
I need a lot more Ted and Karen. I need some resolution here. I need to know why. I basically, if I was going to sum up my what do I want, it would just be what's the deal with Ted? why was just Karen and the daughter in danger in Nancy's vision? Was Ted also in danger and they just straight up hate their father? Like, I don't know what's going on.
Maybe Ted's not a threat. Maybe Vecna's like, just let that guy watch TV.
We're going to find out that Ted is Vecna the whole time.
You know, Ted was starting to badmouth Karen last season.
Yeah, well, Ted, they're weaponizing Ted. Is what they're doing.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
We're getting geared up for the 6th annual Summer Badass Fest. And while we're working on a slate of apex badass films to enjoy, we've got an early action-packed announcement to make.
Just like last year, we're kicking off Badass Season with a live movie watch and podcast recording. We've rented out a theater for connoisseurs of action films and Bald Move fans that just want to have a great time.
Unlike last year, this year's movie is top secret. Hush, hush. No hints, except it's incredibly badass. It stars an absolute icon of the genre. We're willing to bet most of you haven't seen it, and it's going to be an incredible viewing experience with a packed house of Bald Movers.
Those of you who came to last year's screening of Total Recall know what a party it was. And those of you who didn't, now's your chance to experience it. Meet me and Jim. Order some custom movie-themed drinks at the theater's full bar. Then watch us record the full podcast for the movie. We reserved a venue over twice the size as last year, but seating is still limited.
It's happening Friday, June 21st at 7 p.m. in our hometown of Cincinnati. Get full details and buy tickets at baldmove.com/live.
Cincinnati's actually a pretty great city to visit, and we've got lots of details for side adventures on our event page as well. The Reds are playing the Boston Red Sox in their fantastic Riverside Stadium. The thrills of Kings Island just minutes away. And I'll be leading a kayak trip down the scenic Little Miami River on Saturday.
Again, get full details and get your tickets now on our Badass Fest 6 page at baldmove.com/live. Here are the highlights coming up this week on Bald Move.
Our coverage of Hot D, Fire and Blood, and the 1980s Shogun miniseries continues. But then on Tuesday, for the first time in 35 years, we asked a question. Who framed Roger Rabbit? Hop aboard the train to Toontown as we revisit this incredible blending of live action and animation to see if it still holds up all this time later.
Then on Wednesday, we get our first look at Blake Crouch's mind-bending sci-fi series, Dark Matter. The first two episodes drop simultaneously on Apple TV+, and we'll have a pair of podcasts quantumly linked ready for you to observe.
You can find these and many other great podcasts by searching for Bald Move Pulp or Bald Move Prestige in your favorite podcast app.
All right, here's what I would, my third one is, I would like to see a compelling Hopper storyline.
Like he goes back to Russia and he's stuck there for a while?
How about something other than that? I would like to see anything but that.
Just four episodes of him putting ointment on his bruised ankles.
I was thinking about our coverage of season one, and I was just thinking how much of the Jaws DNA was in season one. And it was because Hopper was specifically modeled after the sheriff in Jaws. And there was just a massive part of that first season that was about Hopper trying to figure out what's going on in his small town. And I just love that part of it.
Mm-hmm.
And then you had more of like a, I guess at that point, he just kind of becomes a duo with Joyce.
Mm.
And I really would like to see Hopper kind of return to the Hopper that we first met. Maybe a little bit more enlightened, you know, maybe he's a little bit, you know, more healthy, relationally right. healthy, but I would like to have him actually have a storyline that makes sense and that has something to do with the larger happenings of Hawkins, Indiana.
Yeah, I feel like maybe the ship has sailed on the Chief Brody version of Hopper, and I think we're now into full John McClane version of Hopper.
Yeah, maybe you're right. Maybe you're right. So maybe we see him, you know, barefoot crawling through vents.
Yeah.
That would certainly be fun.
Just get him a catchphrase. Let's go. And maybe no more catchphrases for Dustin. I don't remember what it is. I mean, he had that one line. He was like doing things like, was it like ga 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 going or whatever it was he was doing. He kept on having his. I'm like, all right, Dustin, we find him charming enough. We don't need to try to make this a thing too.
All right, so Steve, going to be a little while before we jump into our rewatch of season two. Where can people find us in the interim?
You mean on our other podcasts, our myriad other podcasts?
Yeah, if you have that information handy.
Well, I mean, we do have Cocoons of Horror, but that's on hiatus, right?
Yeah, but people could check out the catalog, I suppose.
Yeah, they could revisit our revisits.
Yeah, it's not like these movies that we're covering over Cocoons yeah. are new releases.
No, I mean, the biggest danger you have is that, you know, that Tubi is going to stop having Teen Wolf on it or something. You got to rent it. The Cocoons of Horror, of course, you know, the House of the Dragon. Is this House of the Dragon or is this Perfect Stranger Things?
This is Perfect Stranger Things, but we definitely want to be promoting, not House of the Dragon. I mean, we want to promote that, sure. But
well, yeah, the Double Dragon Double is Dragon, where you're going to find us.
That's kind of like the main place that you'll be able to find us in the next, let's say, 3 months.
Yeah, you can revisit all the Perfect Stranger Things episodes for sure, knowing that we will get to 2 and 3. And what's kind of fun about when we do get to 2 and 3 is that we're going to be watching 2 and like when we rewatched 1, we were in anticipation of season 4. And then now when we go to 2 and 3, we're going to go in there through the lens of season 4 and looking forward to season 5. So I think we might be looking for maybe some clues and crumbs that brought us to season 4 that we might have now be able to find in season 2. And I would think especially season 3. So that will make for a fun conversation, but we're not there yet. But yeah, so we're getting ready for Double Dragon. And for those folks that have been already hitting subscribe on Double Dragon, hoping that it would be like a Twitch live stream of us playing the NES classic Double Dragon, and of course, followed by Double Dragon 2. That's not going to be the case, but I can't say it won't for sure be the case. Right? Just, I mean, I don't know if
because there's no sort of visual element, I think that. If you just imagine us playing NES,
mm-hmm.
I am the red character. Steve is the blue character. And so as we're talking about House of the Dragon, we are playing Double Dragon at the same time.
Yeah, and it makes perfect sense when you think about it, because the game did involve fighting, and I'm sure there will be fighting in House of the Dragon. And at one point, a guy picks up a knife. I wouldn't be surprised to see a knife or a dagger or two. I don't think we're going to see the baseball bat as prominently as you may have seen that in the video game Double Dragon.
So I learned a little something about this, Steve, recently. So I was talking with a medievalist on over at Double Dragon. We every now and again we will interview a medievalist. He was saying that in the medieval period, if you were a man of the cloth, let's say you're a cleric, a bishop, a priest, something like that, you were not allowed to shed blood. And so oftentimes you'll see depicted men going off to war. One of them will be carrying something that looks very much like a baseball bat. And that's usually because that's a prince bishop who owns land, who's functioning like a lord, but because he's also a bishop, he can't shed blood. So he's just out there with like a baseball bat kind of club to bludgeon people to death.
To just stave off the potential of them making him bleed.
Maybe he's just there for looks. You know, you got that one guy with a mace, and you're like, I'm not sure if that guy's going to be effective at all in this battle. But it's good to have a guy with a mace, because otherwise it's like you're not trying.
Right.
Or like the ninja with nunchucks. Like, it just looks so cool.
Right.
You know that guy's going to hit himself in the forehead at some point. But
until then, watch out.
If you got a bunch of ninjas and no one's got nunchucks, you're like, these guys are phoning it in.
Yeah, I mean, nunchucks and maces are really just a show-off.
Which you think of like the role of a bishop in general. Like how much of his job is just to show off anyway?
It's true. And if you give that and you give that bishop a baseball bat, which is my favorite follow-up to if you give a mouse a cookie. If you give a bishop a baseball bat, he's going to bludgeon a peasant. He's
going to try out for the Padres. Okay. all right, so yeah, so come check us out over at Double Dragon. What you're going to do is you're just going to go on your phone, you know, wherever you search for podcasts, and you're going to click that little thing that looks like a magnifying glass. It says search underneath it. Mm-hmm. That's going to give you a search bar, and you're just going to type in Double Dragon. Now, the great thing about this is that pretty much everyone knows how to spell double and dragon.
Right. We've learned a lot.
So we don't have the cocoons of horror problem.
Horror.
Horror. Right.
Oh, Jesus, man. That's a goocher.
Just a note I forgot to mention in my conversation with Steve. Our coverage of season one of Stranger Things will be on the Double Dragon feed. So you can do a search and just look at the first 8 or 9 episodes of Double Dragon. It will all be Stranger Things related. Okay, now Steve and I talk a little bit about our experience of the House of the Dragon premiere.
There are two rules to remember if you want to have a good time.
Rules! No rules!
Rule number one.
Keep your friends close, but your enemies closer.
Rule number two.
You're a dragon. Be a dragon.
This week on Double Dragon, Steve and I reflect on our experience of episode one without any spoilers. We're just talking about our feelings of the event and our anticipation going forward. And then after that, we just talk a little bit about our time together in California. Without further ado, here is comic Steve Osborne. So, Steve, we did it. We went to the premiere. We watched episode one of House of the Dragon. I don't think that we're allowed to talk about it.
I think we've already said too much.
So I guess we're done. We're done here. We've done what we came
to
do.
Yeah, if you like what you heard, please subscribe. Send us a message.
Smash that button down below. Rate and review. So what's the parameters here? We can talk around it. We can talk about our feelings, right? We can talk about
I think we give our impressions.
If the episode made me sort of feel things about my childhood, I could maybe talk a little bit about
Yeah, you could just talk about a time in your childhood where, like, and then just, like, actually tell the plot, but you are, like, in place of a dragon.
Sure.
And then no one can, like, what are they going to do? Was HBO going to come out and be like, you didn't live that life? Like, you don't know me, HBO.
All right, so I think, here's what I think. I think now would be a good time to reveal our new rating system. Does that sound good? And then we sort of rate the episode, and then maybe we talk a little bit about the event around the...
Yeah, I mean, as many episodes as we can get in before the actual series starts to make it all about us, I'm all for that.
Mm-hmm. So we have our new rating system, specifically for House of the Dragon episodes. And, oh, we have a new contributor. Oh, wow.
Get it out of his system. He saw something. All right. He's probably going to give out one more chirp because he's a little OCD. There. That should do it.
All right.
Trying to live in a society here.
Okay, so if you're familiar with our Cocoons of Horror rating system, it was basically Howard plus or minus, right? So Howard's the baseline. Howard's a good episode. Right. Howard would be a good movie. Ron Howard produces good movies.
Solid. Yeah. Maybe not spectacular.
Yeah, they're going to have great acting. It's going to be a great plot. They're going to be movies that you might want to rewatch from time to time. They probably won't win Best Picture. You know, that's
probably pretty straightforward, right? Pretty decent use of the cast. Got a good cast.
Sure. I'm going to say Danny is our mid-range. So Danny sort of is the properly Howard barometer here.
So we're not going to just have like three new Howards. We're like going to have like a Howard the Duck.
Mm-hmm. No, yeah.
Howard Hessman.
It's a Hojo plus three, I would say.
Yeah. Ooh, Howard Jones. I like that.
Already off the rails. Okay, so here's our new rating system. I'm going to say a Danny episode is a good episode, all right? And in the same way that when you were watching Game of Thrones back in the day, if there was a really good Danny episode, you'd think, oh, that was a really solid episode of Game of Thrones, all right? So that's our baseline. Then above Danny, we're going to say a good Dinklage episode, right? Mm-hmm. So if we get to like a Danny plus four, now we're in the Dinklage range.
Right.
And if a Game of Thrones episode had a really good Dinklage episode, now we're talking like one of the best episodes of television.
Yeah, you're going to be around that water cooler and you're going to be there for a while.
Yeah, right. And then below Danny is the Dorne. So we have a Dinklage, Danny, Dorne. And I just want to say, want to remind people, a Danny episode is a good episode. Right.
Right.
All right. So.
Doesn't mean that it's not doesn't have some flaws. Mm-hmm. So that's the 3D rating system.
So if we're gonna say something that is a Dinklage episode, it means it's a great episode. It was a great episode of television, but we still reserve the right to say like Dinklage plus one, Dinklage plus two, you know,
Dinklage minus one, right? Like okay, yeah. it's still better than a. Than just than a good. I mean, it's like a Dinklage minus one is a great episode, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, that's the way you work it.
So think of like a thermometer, but the degrees are sort of Dinklage in the high range. Then 3 degrees below is you're going to find the baseline of Danny, and then 3 degrees below that you're going to find the Dorne. But with all of that in mind, a Danny plus two. Is not as good as a Dinklage minus one.
Right, and that's important to note. So I want everybody, like, make your scales. What I would do, listeners at home, mm-hmm. I'd get some poster board and sure. Maybe some crayons. Maybe, get those...
Get some post-it notes just to do a rough draft.
Get some pens. Get those pens that smell.
Yeah.
Right? You want those scented pens.
Some scratch and sniff stickers.
Yeah. Get a little chart going, That's fun. I'm a visual learner right now. Some of you are like, well, can I just use an Excel sheet? Like, yeah, but you can't smell it. So get one of those Sir Sniffs-a-Lot or whatever. What are those pens called? Smell it. Is that what they're called?
I think they're just called pens? Stinkies. They're just
called Stinkies.
That's sort of the British. British. They rebranded them in Britain as Stinkies.
I like that. The brown Stinky smells like meat pie. I know very little about British culture.
I let you borrow me blueberry Stinky. You never gave it back.
Look, I've got my boysenberry Stinky. I've got my meat pie Stinky. I've got my Stinky Stinky.
What is the Stinky Stinky?
I'll let you figure it out.
All right, so Steve, first episode of House of the Dragon, which we don't know the name for yet, right? We saw the episode. We did not actually see the title of the episode. So we're just going to call it the pilot episode, I suppose.
Pilot, yes.
And on our new rating system, what do you think?
I would say, and I'll and again, I'm not. This is a spoiler-free zone, everybody. This is a spoiler-free zone. I would say that I was... It is properly Danny, I think.
It's a good episode.
It's a good episode. I think that there were elements where I'm like, I don't think I ever reached into, is this a Dorne? I think I was definitely in the, so far this is, this. There were some moments where I'm like, this could be low Danny.
There were zero moments in my viewing experience where I thought, uh-oh, we got ourselves a Dorne on our hands.
Right. Yeah, I would agree. And but there was definitely moments where I'm like, not like, it was the catching factor. There were some things where I'm just like, is it catching me? What am I like? Because then you're rife with expectations, right? I mean, we had probably recalibrated our expectations about 17 different times, probably just on the way to the museum.
We should talk about our expectations going into this. But let's just go ahead and put you on the record. You're saying it's a properly Danny episode.
Properly Danny, with some performances I think that were flirting into the Dinklage range.
Well, all right, that's good. And so I wonder if... I'm actually surprised that you said that, because I remember afterwards talking to you and Aaron, and you guys are both saying, oh, no, this was good. This was really good.
Mm-hmm.
And so I thought, oh, I think that they liked it better than I did. So, but I think that maybe you've settled into a Danny. Is that what I'm hearing?
Yeah, no. Well, because I think what happens is that, you know, we talked about this a few minutes after, like we had our kind of our initial reaction. We didn't really know what to say to each other. You know, we had expected maybe that they would put us in a podcast corral, and we thought maybe we would be somewhat separated, but we were right
maybe
in the thick
of it. But you're right. We had great seats. You know, we were sitting, you know, 10 seats away from some of the actors, and that was a little surreal. We should talk about that, but all right, let's talk about the rating. So I thought you were going to go higher. And I was thinking good, not great.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, sort of on the plane ride home, thinking about, okay, so I think it was in the Danny range, but there were a few scenes that I just thought were electric.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I thought because of that, and because it never kind of dipped.
Right.
I'm going to say Danny plus two.
Okay. Yeah, I think I settled on Danny, properly Danny, because I almost feel like that is pretty good praise for a pilot, because this episode, I believe, did a lot to set up, and like, that's as far as I'll go, you know. But in terms of like, hey,
yeah, that's
kind of
what I told Sarah, and Sarah's never watched any Game of Thrones, She's like, so did you, and I'm like, you know how like first episodes they have to introduce a lot of characters and they have to do a lot of exposition to tell you how these characters relate to one another and what their relational dynamic is. I feel like this episode did all of that, but it also happened to be very compelling. And there were moments that it was just electric. And I thought that was fantastic.
The directing was very good. Yeah, you're right. I mean, like, it's one thing to introduce characters. It's another thing to introduce characters and say, okay, now I get a pretty good sense of who's what. I mean, and that's a lot. I mean, we've already, like, one thing about Game of Thrones is they just kept on piling characters on, and it still was working. Now, I mean, it helps if you start killing them off, too, so that you can replace them. But this one definitely, I'm like, wow, there's a lot going on, but it didn't feel cluttered.
And that's, it didn't feel cluttered, and maybe it tried to introduce a few, maybe fewer characters? I don't remember. I do remember, though, that in the original Game of Thrones pilot, it was famously, it was a mess. So much so that they kind of vaulted it, and they had to recast a few characters, and they had to go back to the drawing board for a number of scenes. If you go back to that first episode of Game of Thrones, it has a much different feel. I mean, it just it feels a bit hokier. It feels like, you know, are you introducing too many characters? This didn't have that problem at all. This had no point was I thinking, this is a little bit cringy. So
well, tonally, and it's the way that it dealt with logistics and just the little bit of world building, it felt, that part felt very much like peak Game of Thrones watching.
Well, and the other thing about this is that you have to do less world building with this episode, right?
Right, right. I mean, you're setting up a time frame and all of that, and it did feel, I mean, like, you get concerned, like, is it going to feel more like some of the hastened work in season 8, or is it going to feel like some of the patient work in, say, season 3 or 4, right?
Mm-hmm.
If I recall, we were walking, and as I was appreciating it more, I'm like, what I liked about it is that it had the confidence in its storytelling that it was still being patient. And I like that. I like that.
Yeah, we were talking. So we were driving down from the Bay Area to Los Angeles, which, for those who don't know, that's about an 8-hour drive. And so on our way down, you've just started up Better Call Saul, right? So you're just kind of in the middle of season 2 now. And what I was saying that I liked about Better Call Saul was that I think that a lesser series would say, okay, you liked Breaking Bad, let's outdo that. Let's make it, more thrilling than Breaking Bad. And what Better Call Saul did was like, nope, we're going to make it more subtle. We're going to make the character dynamics more nuanced. We're going to be very patient with the story that we're telling. So instead of sort of going bigger, they went deeper.
Right.
And I was saying, I would like to see them do something like that with this episode, but come on, it's HBO. It's going to try to go bigger. It's not going to try to go deeper. I think it might have gone bigger and deeper.
I think you're right. And part of that too, like if you're just going to do a straight comparison from, pilot to pilot or first episode to first episode, well, of course this should have all the lessons learned to some degree of from that Game of Thrones. Because Game of Thrones wasn't Game of Thrones when it came out, budgets are different, everything's different. Right. And so the backing of the studio is different. So in this case, I mean, you've got full support of studios and producers. And so you've got all kinds of hands in this thing. You've got, your effects are better. Your set pieces are probably richer. I mean, just everything. Right. So,
well, also you became the appointment television viewing experience for 5 years straight. And because of that, you can probably grab actors that know are going to do solid work. And
well, it was interesting because we were talking to somebody who, I don't know if she was a direct representative of one of the actors, but she was certainly like part of the team, right, representation. And she was referring to, talking about her experience with the actors. And I forget exactly what it was, but I think there was this sense of, even from the actor's perspective, like maybe not really realizing what he had gotten himself into in terms of what the expectations are going to be, the level of fandom that he's going to encounter. And, and I think there was something about that too. Like we had the discussion, like we were talking about just what to wear and how we compose ourselves. And you had a few times said things like, I mean, this is not a movie premiere. It's a TV show. And I'm like, yeah, this isn't, you know, like season three of Cagney and Lacey. You know, this is... This is Game of Thrones. I mean, this is about as big as a TV show will ever be.
I know, but I guess I was just thinking, like, come on, this is a premiere.
Anything I can watch in my underwear, yeah. ultimately, right. I think what it came down to, you figured anything that would invite us, how good could it be?
All right, yeah, no, for sure.
Yeah, and shout out to HBO, though. I mean, they certainly didn't have to invite us, and we'll invite you and then me tag along. But it was great. I mean, there was I felt like there was no corners cut.
Well, also, there wasn't like a kids' table thing. Like, we, you know, for most of the evening, we were, you know, 5 feet away from some of the people that were in the show. And
yeah,
you got to talk to a few of these guys. And
whether they liked it or not.
And so anyway, it didn't feel like we were partitioned off in any way.
No.
It was fun. It was fun.
Yeah.
I want to talk about the experience before and after. All right. So. My sense is that, like, and I think I mentioned this to you in the car on the way down. I was thinking, I don't think that we are going to be in a good space to experience this objectively. How can we not be built up for this event? They're making everyone that goes to this thing kind of feel special. How can we not be built up for this event? Right? It's not just a show. It's an event. And so my feeling was, we're going to be let down.
Yeah.
We're built up for this. It doesn't matter how good it is. Even if it's good, it's going to be kind of a letdown because the actual show on the screen is not going to live up to the experience of being at this premiere. I did not feel let down.
No, no.
I mean, we were built up for it. Yeah, I think it delivered. It delivered.
Right, and our viewing experience is going to be very different than anybody else that we know, right? I mean, just seeing it early, right, is and not being able to talk about it. And that's another thing I think that is interesting about the Game of Thrones experience, how much that show existed beyond the hour you watched, mm-hmm. right? And so we left that, and we could talk about it with each other, but even now, here we have a podcast about it. We can't talk about it, and I think that's what also
occurred to me, Steve. We didn't have to go. We could have just pretended.
Oh yeah,
that would have saved us a little bit of money for sure.
And same difference. We're not going to tell people what we saw.
Yeah, this I just realized just now that we absolutely could have just come on this podcast and said everything that we just said.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, now that I planted that in the listeners' minds. They're going to be wondering, did these guys actually go to the event?
Right.
They're just making this up.
That's a good point. That's a good point.
So we're kind of like Schrodinger's podcasters.
Podcasters, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, given that the open bar, I'm not entirely sure I was there.
Now, I do want to mention, afterwards, you did speak with Sapochnik. I saw you talking with Sapochnik. I saw you talking with Lizard from Spider-Man,
mm-hmm.
the second Spider-Man reboot. I'm not really sure how to say his name. Riz Iffens is how I've been saying it.
Right.
But and now I think maybe it's Reese. I don't know. I don't know how that. We're just going to call him Lizard, right?
And because of your insecurity, I've only referred to him as Lizard.
Sure. All right. So you did talk to Lizard. I saw that.
I think it is Reese.
Oh, it Ifans. Is? All right. Okay. Or it could be Riz Iffens, or it could just be Lizard. He did Riz have Ifans. Two arms. I like that Reese you pointed that
Reese
out.
Reese Iffens. Yes, he did. Yeah, it did grow back. It looked good.
Clearly, the Lizard serum is working for him. I don't know if that's what you guys talked about. I didn't actually overhear your conversation.
You know, he was pretty hush hush about it. He said the whole thing about proprietary, and he said that if I had the time to sign an NDA, and I said, "Look, man, I just want to say I liked your arm."
I thought your arm was great. I thought your arm was great in this episode.
Convincing, very convincing.
Dr. Lizard, Dr. Connie.
So right now, everybody's like, "Well, There's our first spoiler. He's got two arms in this movie.
And then, I'm blanking on the third celebrity brush up that you had.
I mean, I had a very brief little wink and nod towards Matt Smith, but the and then
so wait, you just what was it, sort of like a point and a wink?
It was more of a drink up, a little nod and a wink.
Oh, so you had the cocktail in your hand,
yeah,
and you raised a glass. It was sort of like I'm raising a glass to your performance,
exactly,
Mr. Daemon Targaryen. All right, yeah. Excellent. And then was there an acknowledgement from across the room?
We were real close, and he gave me a little nod back and a little bit of a smile. So,
and about it. I mean, at that point, did you retire to his room? I wasn't there the whole time.
Again, that cocktail that I raised might have been number 7. So you tell me. You tell me where I ended up.
Okay. Is there anything else about the actual event that you wanted to mention?
Well, what I liked is that we're dummies, right? I mean, we get to the after party, we're herded into this. We have no idea where we're going in the afternoon.
Yeah, we have no, like, we have no connection. We've been in LA a number of times, both of us, but we've never had any kind of Hollywood connection before.
Right.
So anyway, yeah, go ahead.
So we're just sort of following, we're, you know, this is our opportunity to be talking about the show. And I know that, like, we have like our ticket, but you're going from the theater to the after party, so there's no real need to show your ticket at this point, because if you're in, you're in. But I did know that there were people that had lanyards that said red carpet, right? So that's, we're waiting for all the red carpet folk to come in before the show started. And by the way, George R. R. Martin was not there because he has COVID. So we're getting corralled, and so we're still, now this is sort of the moment of
truth.
And
by the way, I think that will help him write Winds of Winter.
He just has some time.
I mean, I think that the general logic would be like, oh no, he's going to die. I don't think so. I think it's sort of like he just needed a little bit of downtime, and this will serve as inspiration for his writing.
But all the characters are like coughing and have new confusion.
There you go.
But you just write what you know. But yeah, so now kind of the moment of truth, like where do we get to go? Right, like at some point, is there going to be a show me your red carpet lanyard, and then you go in here, or you know? And we just, next thing you know, it's like you want a mac and cheese ball. And here's what I want to say about Hollywood parties: no Hollywood party is above a mac and cheese ball, and that matters to me.
Mm-hmm. Now, I did not have the mac and cheese ball. Did you partake in the mac and cheese ball?
I did not. There was one left on the plate, and I wanted to sort of, you know, act like I've been there before, right? Mm. I'm not going to go for the first mac and cheese ball that comes my way. Let's see what you got to offer. And at one point, they offered us a spoon of corn.
Yeah, I took that not knowing what it was, but I thought, you're serving it in a Japanese ladle spoon. I'm probably going to like this.
Yeah,
and then I was not prepared for the sense that was corn. That it was going to be corn. Like, why? Why serve it that way if it's corn?
You wanted it on the cob.
Yeah, if you're going to serve me corn, I want it on the cob. That's right.
Or just one big giant cob that you just kind of go and take a bite of like it's shawarma. So then we go like, okay.
Cheek to cheek with Matt Damon. Sorry, not so, Matt Damon. What am I saying?
Matt Smith.
Matt Smith, sure.
Yeah, so then we're like, hey, there's a bar, right? And a part of me is thinking, let's get a little liquid courage into us, because who knows, right? Are we gonna talk to people? Are we gonna mingle? And the bar is just jam packed, so we're like, all right, let's just get in line. We even set a timer to see if it was even worth our effort. We went and got two drinks each, one for us and one for our dates, as we said. So now we're walking around with two drinks in our hand, and now I'm like, you know what? This is way more gauche than getting that first mac and cheese ball. Just
now, I want people to know, I feel a little bit like, even though it was my idea to say that we needed a drink for our dates, I knew I was going to drink both drinks, but I didn't feel like, I felt a little self-conscious about holding a drink in both hands.
Yeah.
So I just kind of pounded the first drink.
Right. Yeah. Samesies. Yeah. And then, like, you know, after a while, the bar just sort of opens up, and then that was that. But yeah, then so like, then we remembered food, and like the food was just like a giant buffet charcuterie board is what it was, and we would just. It felt very Game of Thrones just when we walked up and there was like, oh, there's not a lot of stuff here. And all of a sudden, someone just comes over with this giant plate of meat and just pours it all over the table.
Starts just dumping mountains of meat on the table.
Yeah. And we're just, yeah, it was, after a while, we started to just fit in. Yeah, I followed your lead. You would just, when you're done with the plate, you would just go set it on a topiary. Figure someone will deal with it.
Just set it on a fake hedge.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, and all of a sudden it would just disappear. That's Hollywood magic for you right there. Okay. There were other elements of our California experience that I do want to discuss. This is not Game of Thrones related at any point. This is not House of the Dragon related. So if you need to, like, skip off... You know, go do something else. You don't want to hear about any of this stuff, then just turn it off now. No one's going to blame you for it. So before the event, we're going to San Francisco. We're both going to go to Punchline together because you've got responsibilities at Punchline. And your idea was, I'd like to buy a new hat for this event.
Ah, yes.
All right. Now, I've never been hat shopping before. I've been in stores where I saw a hat and thought, oh, I think that I'm going to buy this hat. But I've never gone to a hat store in the city specifically to buy a hat. But not only did you know where this place was, you actually had like a Subway punch card kind of thing.
Right.
Where if you buy 10 hats, you get one free.
Right.
And so you whip that thing out and you got us a discount on some hats. And I just want people to know that Steve was very close to buying a seafoam fedora.
Yeah. And I'm not a fedora guy.
You've never been a fedora guy. I don't think that either of us believe that you can pull off a fedora. But at one point we thought if it's a seafoam fedora.
Right.
Then absolutely. Let's see what it looks like on Steve. And we both thought it almost looked good, right?
Right. Yeah, almost.
So for some reason, we were dissuaded from getting the seafoam fedora. Although I am sure that the store would have been happy to sell it to you, right?
Yeah, I think that was actually their intent.
All right. So... But you did get a couple other hats. You're happy with your purchases, I'm assuming?
Yeah, my Yacht Rock bucket hat.
Mm-hmm. Which you wore on stage that night at the at San Francisco Punchline.
Definitely a different look for me as well. A little, it's a reversible hat. It's got like kind of like jungle leaves on one side, and then the other is gray with a little embroidered martini.
Yeah, a little martini glass with a little stir stick. And an olive inside, I think.
Yeah, that was correct.
Yeah. So you got that. Now, for me, those are, you know, two notable purchases. For me, I've never been to a hat store. I would have never thought to go to a hat store. And I went to this hat store, and I made a very bold purchase.
Very bold.
Which is a big deal. Like you know, you absolutely bought hats that, you know, and one of the hats, bucket hats, sort of unlike a hat you've worn before on stage, right?
Right.
For me, I went for the very first time, I went with a full 360 brim. And as we've noted before, I can be adventurous when it comes to headwear, right?
Mm-hmm.
But this was my first step toward the fedora. It was more of I think it's called a Charleston.
Is that okay?
It kind of has that short brim. It flips up and goes all the way around. It was a big step for me.
But you put it on and we immediately were like, hey. You know, it was one of those moments where, like, you got to really stop and, like, because you put it on and it was like, hey, this looks good. And you had
I was a little bit surprised that I thought it looked good.
Yeah, and I wanted to live in the let's be surprised by joy and not dwell on the shock of it. Like, hey, we can't believe it because then you start talking in the negative. So let's just embrace the positive. And so, And then I tried it on to see, well, maybe I don't know, maybe I, and then I immediately were like, nope, you look ridiculous.
So I was surprised by that. But here's the other thing I wanted to note about our San Francisco experience. All right, I've seen you do stand-up before. Mm-hmm. And I've been to, you know, big comedy venues before, famous comedy venues before. Seeing you at the San Francisco Punchline was a whole different experience for me. And I want you to know that I was kind of in awe of the power you wielded at this event. And oh, I mean, yeah. You're laughing because it kind of sounds funny, but I'm being totally sincere here. So I just want people to note that this is a venue that seats, what, like 125 people or something like that?
Yeah, yeah.
All right. So imagine 125 people packing a space, but about 50 of them are comics who want to get on stage.
Mm-hmm.
They're on the sides, they're lining the bar. These are all comics that come out every Sunday night, maybe for years, mm-hmm. just for 7 minutes of stage time. And Steve has all of them on his spreadsheet, and he has the power to decide who gets to go on stage and who does not.
That's true.
And there's no one else in the room that has that power. They all have to come to Steve and say, hey, man, I've been coming for 2 years. I'm moving back to Houston tomorrow. Is there any way I can get on stage, even for 5 minutes?
That's true.
And then out of generosity, you let the young fellow on stage, and he was not great.
Right.
And so you pulled him off. You pulled him off stage. It was just something to behold. I just want to say it wasn't like, you know, Daniel Day-Lewis and There Will Be Blood kind of powerful. But it was legitimate. It was legitimate power, and I thought you wielded it very well. You brought up established voices that you knew were going to pull off the set. You also brought up new comics. There was a nice diversity of voices. I could see that it's quite a balancing act, and I think that you wore the crown, and you wielded it well.
Well, thank you. No, it is. It's a lot of work. It's a process that, you know, I had to go through, obviously, to get to be passed as a comic at Punchline. So you have a appreciation for the process. Some people hate it, you know. Some people, even though they passed, they still hate it. Some people just refuse to engage in it. But it's a process they've been using for decades, and you know it's been working for them. And so so there's a respect for the process. But you are still producing a show, so you want people that paid money to have a good evening. So you have to be watching the whole thing, right? Mm-hmm. You're watching. You want to take care of the club. You want to take care of the audience, and you want to take care of the comics that are paying their dues, right? So appreciate you noticing the work that has to go into it.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, I was just going to note that it was kind of fun to see you go from sort of like the king of the comedy club to kind of like a peasant at the Hollywood premiere.
Yeah, that seems about right.
You know, now you're a schlub like the rest of us again.
Yeah, they don't know what I went through the night before.
Anyway, sort of synopsis here. We both liked it, and we think that you're going to like it. So we can't wait to talk a little bit more about the plot once it's actually out on HBO. Sure.
Not too far away at all.
And by then, maybe Steve will have built up the courage to buy that seafoam fedora. Not wearing it to the premiere, but just kind of wearing it around the house for Heather.
Oh, no, not at all. No. Anytime I sent her a picture of the hats, she was like, she'd have a comment that was not what I would consider encouraging.
I think you did send her a text with the fedora. And I think she texted back, does it come with a pony?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.